Welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on energy when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, and we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if your carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? You know, our common sense ought to tell us that a plumber or carpenter who can't fix his own pipes or fix his own steps is incompetent. Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor of law at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said. He said, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And it's worse than that. He said most students actually graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real, honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. A student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. And that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's the place to start. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Energy and energy policy here in the United States are kind of front and center. With the price of diesel, I reported to you last week, at $3.76 here at our local DX station, and headed to $4 a gallon, I pointed out to you that we're working here in America toward an energy tax of $1 a gallon. That $3.76 is going to translate shortly into $4.76. In Europe, the price of fuel is $6 a gallon. Now, of course, the Europeans have a lot of taxes on it, and they do that for good reason. They recognize over in Europe that they don't have petroleum, and that there is a thing called paying your bills, which we Americans don't do, but other people in the world have to pay their bills. And in order for them to do that, they have to have the money. And so they charge these extra taxes on the fuel. It does two things. One, it gives them the exchange, foreign exchange, that they're going to need to pay for the oil that's imported into their countries. And then secondly, it is a damper on consumption. And that's why the Europeans have small, energy-efficient cars. And we Americans are driving around in gas guzzlers. We don't have the taxes on the gasoline here that they have in Europe. Now, they'd like to. I mean, politicians, you know, are the same everywhere in the world. They'd like to. But we Americans have a lot of oil here in our own country that they don't have in Austria and Italy and France, Germany. And so as a result of that, you know, we have traditionally been used to having cheap gasoline. I can remember as a kid, the price of gas was about, 30 cents a gallon normally, 33 or 4 cents. And then when they'd have a gas war, they'd, you know, go down to a quarter. So gasoline in this country, when I was a kid, you know, was dirt cheap. And traditionally before that, it was even cheaper yet. For instance, in 1937, gasoline was 17 cents a gallon. So a 17-cent gallon gas in 37 by 1950 is up to 27 cents a gallon. This is nationwide. And it isn't changed much from that day to this. If you adjust for inflation, the price of gasoline at $3 a gallon today is comparable, based upon the inflationary increases, to about $3 a gallon today, to 30 cents a gallon back in 1950. So, you know, you're not hurting yet. And while we're paying $3.76 a gallon, it's about the price of 1950 to 55 when gasoline was 37 cents a gallon. 37 cents. You know, that extra nickel, you know, it adds up, no doubt about it. It's just that we have not been used to paying that kind of money. And, of course, you know, if you're spending your money on other things and all of a sudden you got to go back to spending your money on fuel, now we have to do without some other things. And so then that's a shock. And Americans are spoiled rotten anyway. And so we throw temper tantrums, and we cry a lot. And we sound like a bunch of farmers over here talking about prices, you know. Farmers have always been complaining about prices. It's never been any different. I've never been to the restaurant, the coffee class, or any place else and sat down and talked to a bunch of farmers. They weren't complaining about prices. And they'll say, when prices are good, they'll say, well, you know, it's all right today, you know, but what about next year? You know, what about the year after next? You know, they go out into the future here, you know, to come up with something negative. And people generally are pretty negative. Now, when we talk about energy and energy policy, there's a lot to talk about, because energy comes from petroleum, nuclear power, wind power, solar power, hydropower, biofuel, wave power, tidal power, coal, biomass, and geothermal power. I mean, there's lots of sources of energy. And most of these sources of energy could run all of the energy demands of mankind. For instance, there's enough geothermal power in the Earth's crust to satisfy all of the power needs of mankind forever. Did you know that? And so the advocates of geothermal power, they point that out, and they say, all you got to do is drill holes in the Earth's crust and tap into that geothermal power, like they did at Geyserville, California. And then there's all this biomass out there and coal. There's enough coal here in the United States to run all of our energy needs for 666 years. Just coal alone. If we never drilled for another barrel of oil, never drilled another geothermal well, didn't have any biofuel whatsoever, we'd have enough coal to run America for 666 years, you know, at today's current levels. So when we talk about, you know, alternative energies, you know, I talk about solar power, wind power, you know, there's enough wind out there to power everything from soup to nuts forever. Now, there's some drawbacks on all of these power sources. And these drawbacks over here are pointed out by the detractors. You know, if you're in the coal business, you've got to have something negative to say about petroleum. Well, see, it's a finite resource, and we're about to reach peak oil, and so you better not rely on petroleum. And, of course, the petroleum guys, they come along and they say, well, our petroleum over here is so much more efficient than your coal over there that you should buy our petroleum over here. And, of course, we need ever-increasing prices. And, of course, everybody wants more money for their product. I mean, the oil man, he wants more money for his product, and the coal man, he wants more money for his product. And one of the things that drives prices is scarcity, the marketplace and scarcity. So in petroleum, when there's a threat of a disruption in supplies, then the bidding goes up, or the prices go up depending upon the bidding, and then the price of oil goes up to $100 a barrel. And so you've noticed that since we had this war in Iraq, that the price of oil has been steadily increasing. And they're talking about another war with Iran, and that makes everybody nervous, because Iran supplies about 10% of the world's demand for oil. They export a lot of oil, and of course, if they got that cut off. And then, of course, there's this constant dialogue, you know, or this controversy between Venezuela and the United States. And the Venezuelan president says, we're going to cut off your oil, and we get 14% of our oil imports come from Venezuela. And of course, you know, if you shut off 14%, you know, that would have an immediate impact upon the market. And there's only a few days supply in the pipeline. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the oil pipeline, that's the ships that are leaving foreign ports that come into Houston, Texas, most of them come to Houston. These ships hold oil, and there's several hundred of them, and so the empty ships are going back to Saudi Arabia, and the full ships are on their way over here, and that's the pipeline. And then, of course, those ships have, you know, a lot of oil in them, and it's a few days supply. Then there's tanks and all these tank farms, and there's a few days supply. And then there's the pipelines that run all the way from Louisiana up to Boston, and that pipeline is full of oil all the time. It's got oil in it all the time. It's got, and there's a few days supply of oil, so that if the ships were to stop coming into America, we'd have a 56-day supply. Then there's the Strategic Oil Reserve. They say they've got a one-year supply for emergencies, but I don't know if they really have that much. But keep in mind that there's a lot of oil out there, but, you know, it's in the pipeline, it's in the ships, it's in the storage tanks, it's in the Strategic Reserve, and it only amounts to about a 60-day supply. And, of course, the moment that the oil is shut off, you can just expect rationing. You can expect turmoil, lines at the gas pumps. I mean, there's really no big problem for 60 days. You won't run out for 60 days if you just keep using it normally and naturally. But, of course, people don't do that. Then they start hoarding. Say, I mean, you'd be down at the gas station with every 5-gallon can that you could get your hands on filling up so that you'd have more than your share. And somebody else would have to share the shortage. That's the natural way that human beings work. And, of course, the government has to come in here and protect the broad mass of consumers out there. And they'd have to come in here with some kind of rationing program and so on. Energy policy. God, what a topic. And everybody's excited about it. Everybody's talking about it. And the news media is constantly talking about oil and the shortage of oil and the disruption, high prices, and $100 a barrel oil. And is it going to go down? Peak oil, and just on and on and on it goes. So I thought, well, we'll probably take a look at the peak oil problem to start off with. As long as I have been alive, and I'm pushing 70 now, there's been this peak oil problem. And peak oil is a real, real term. I mean, there's something to be said about peak oil. But there's also something that we should understand, you know, about peak oil. Did you understand that the sun is burning out? And that at some point in time, the sun is going to totally burn up. And when the sun totally burns up, there won't be any more sunlight. And that life as we know it here on planet Earth will be unsustainable when the sun burns out. Now, most of us are not too concerned about the sun burning out because we've been told all of our lives that the sun's been there for billions and billions of years. And it's going to be there for billions and billions more years. When I was a kid, they used to talk about sun, you know, and evolution, and the world has been here for at that time, they used to think 2.5 billion years. Now they're up to about 4 billion years. Okay. Well, here's the story on the sun. The sun is being consumed at the rate of 5 feet per hour. 5 feet an hour. Now, that's a lot. There's no doubt about that. And the sun provides a tremendous amount of energy. And if you stop and think about it, the little bit of energy that the Earth receives from the sun, 1%. Do you know that? The sun produces 100 units of energy, and Earth receives 1% of the sun's radiant energy. Because on the other side of the sun, all of that energy is going in the opposite direction from the Earth. Did you know that? Of course, as the Earth is circling the sun, we get the energy on the back side of the sun when we go around to the back side, you know, in the wintertime. But hey, listen, keep in mind that when we are on this side of the sun, all of that energy is going off in other directions. Well, at 5 feet an hour, the sun is going to burn out in 100,000 years. Now, we used to think in terms of billions of years, but you know, seeing as how I'm only going to be here for another 10 or 15 years, that's not my problem. Is it? And for the next generation or two or five or nine or 15 or 26 generations, you know, the sun being consumed at 5 feet an hour isn't a problem. 10, 15, 20,000 years from now, it might be. The reason I bring this up is because we constantly hear about peak oil. And so a question arises, well, how much oil is there in the world? Has anybody ever asked and answered that question? Well, the Wikipedia people have done it. God bless Wikipedia. And they came up to the conclusion, and they gave us an answer here concerning peak oil and petroleum over here. And on page 18 and 19, let me get over here, page 18 and 19. It's page 26, here's 19, here we go. Wikipedia, this is the free encyclopedia online. In 1855, people could only possess whatever oil happened to seep to the surface. And in an advertisement for the Kier's Rock Oil, they stated, hurry before this wonderful product is depleted from nature's laboratory. That was in 1855. Hurry, 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 step right up. Don't be the last guy to miss out on this once-in-a-lifetime value in 1855. And that's because nobody drilled for oil yet, and so the natural oil seeping to the surface, they would collect it, refine it, and do something with it, and sell it as a magic elixir or something like that. Well, in 1874, the state geologist of Pennsylvania, the United States' leading oil-producing state, said that all of the oil would be gone by 1878. They only had a 4-year supply of oil in Pennsylvania, which at that time was the United States' number one oil-producing state. By 1920, the U.S. Geological Survey said that the world only had 60 billion barrels of oil left. 60 billion barrels of oil. In 1950, the geologist estimated that the world had 600 billion barrels of oil. That was 10 times more than they had in 1920. Since the 1960s, the major oil surveys have shown close to 2,000 billion barrels. Now, that's 2 trillion barrels of oil since the 1960s. In 1970, scientists estimated that the world had 1.5 billion barrels of oil. That's 1,500 billion barrels. That's 1.5 trillion. In 1994, the U.S. Geological Survey estimated that the world had 2,400 billion barrels of oil. That's 2,400,000,000,000. And in 2000, the U.S. Geologic Survey estimated that the world had 3,000, that's 3 trillion barrels of oil. This is the U.S. Geologic Survey. Now, the 95% confidence estimated ultimate retrieval of a little over 2 trillion barrels has been the average finding of major oil surveys since 1965. The year 2000 U.S. Geologic Survey assumed a discovery trend over the next 20 years, which would completely and dramatically reverse the observed trend over the past 40 years. Their 95% confidence of 2,300 billion barrels assumed that discovery levels would remain steady. Despite discovery levels having fallen quickly and steadily since the 1960s, the trend of falling discoveries has continued in the 7 years since the U.S. Geologic Survey made their assumption. Now, none of this means that new oil is forming, or that peak oil will never happen, but it implies that technological advances have allowed the discovery and the recovery of more oil than was historically expected. As oil estimates have remained steady since the 1960s, this appears to no longer be the case, as can be seen above. Nevertheless, one significant source of uncertainty is the continuing inability to independently audit stated reserves from many of the world's biggest oil producers. So one of our problems is that we can't really go down to Venezuela and say, no, look, Chavez, move over. We're going to count your oil and see how much you got. That's a little difficult to go over to Iran and say, hey, move over, buddy. We're going to come over here and estimate. We're going to come over here and count your oil wells and find out how much oil you guys have got. Now, America has gone from the old days when we used to have bottom-up control over our economy. It's now top-down. We now have a communist system where we have these energy policies that emanate now from Washington. And five oil companies now dominate all of the oil in the world. And we call this competition. I call it controlled and structured oil production and oil pricing. But we call that competition. That's the modern world. Now, when I was a kid, there was hundreds of oil companies. Literally hundreds of them. And there were little guys out here that could just go drill a well anytime they wanted to. I mean, hell, in the 1920s and 30s and 40s and 50s, you know, if you wanted to, you just went out here and dug a hole in the ground. If you found oil, well, good for you. And if you didn't, well, too bad. Today, you can't just go out here and drill an oil well. We have laws and rules and regulations. And, of course, along with all of these laws, rules, and regulations, we have less oil production. And it was structured and designed that way. And it's for competitive purposes. John D. Rockefeller said competition was a sin. And I got to tell you a little story over here because we have not managed our oil resources here in the United States with the kind of prudence that we would if an individual had it. For instance, when a big oil company like Exxon goes out looking for oil, they're looking for oil wells that produce 15,000 barrels a day. Boys and girls, most oil wells don't produce 15,000 barrels a day. I had an oil man in here some years back, and he had about 25 or 30 stripper wells over in Kansas. And those wells produce about 10 barrels a week. And a stripper well, and all the stripper wells in the United States back in the 1950s, there were about 100,000 oil wells back in those days, and they produced 17% of our oil came out of these stripper wells. Now, here's something that's really surprising to me. From the time that you drill an oil well and you recover the oil out of it, do you know that you only get 20% of the oil out of the oil well? Yeah, that's an amazing statistic. You drill an oil well, and you get 15,000 barrels a day, and then when the oil well peters out, you have recovered 20% of the oil that's down there in that hole. Isn't that amazing? So they have some other methodologies that they can use. They can inject steam. They can inject water. They can inject gas. They can heat the oil down there. They can recover more oil. And when they do, guess how much they get? They can double the amount of oil that is recovered. They can get 40%. That's it. So if you take a look at all of the depleted oil fields in the world, do you know how much oil is left in those oil wells? Well, 60% of all the oil that was in the oil well or in the field to start with is still there. We haven't figured out how to get it out yet. So if you want to know how much oil there is in the world, start off with all of the oil that's ever been produced in the world to this moment in time, and then take and add 60% to that, and that's how much oil is left down there that nobody's going after. And nobody's going after it because we don't need it. If we needed it, we'd be figuring out how to go get it. But we don't need it. Now, oil wells that go down 5,000 feet, listen, we've got mines that go down a mile. Did you know that? I mean, you can drill a hole big enough for a miner to go down into the ground looking for, you know, gold or whatever. You know, you can go down a mile, 2 miles. Did you know that? Yeah, we do that regularly around the world. And if you needed to, you could drill a hole down into an oil well. You know, a lot of oil wells are 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 8,000 feet deep. And you could just go down there and go down there with a sponge mop and start soaking it up. I mean, if push ever came to shove, I just thought I'd throw that one in there just for funsies. Nobody's doing that. Nobody's proposing that we do anything like that because it is necessary. It ain't necessary. As I just pointed out, in 2000, the U.S. Geologic Survey estimated there's about 3,000 billion barrels of oil in the world that's left to be recovered in the ordinary and everyday garden variety method. Now, up in the north slope of Alaska, you know, they call it Prudhoe Bay. Do you know they've never pumped a barrel of oil out of that ground yet? Yeah, that's right. In fact, the big oil companies, they don't like pumping oil. Pumping oil costs money, you don't get very much, and it takes a lot of time, effort, and energy. They like to go after the oil that has a lot of gas pressure under it. So over in the Middle East, this is where the best oil is. It's where you poke a hole in the ground, and there's 1,600 pounds of pressure down there, and it just forces the oil out. And that's the oil that we're going after, and that's where the 3 trillion barrels of oil is located. It's in the provable reserves where we know we got the oil, and we don't need to pump it out of the ground. Here in the United States, it's not like that. We drill a well, and we got to pump the oil out. And the big oil companies don't like that. And so on these stripper wells, the big oil companies came along in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, and they said, look, 20% of the oil in this country is coming out of these stripper wells, and that's a competitive factor. It's 20% of the oil. We don't like that. So they went to Congress and they said, we need environmental regulations on these stripper wells. We need to have them sealed up and closed. Well, you know, the major cost of drilling a well is about, used to be $100,000. Now it's $1 million or more. Well, now if you're getting 10 barrels of oil a week out of a stripper well in Kansas, which aren't the better stripper wells, by the way, but you're getting 10 barrels a week. Well, at $100 a barrel, you know, that's $1,000 a week. And if you've got 25 of those wells, you know, it's $25,000 a week. I mean, you know, you could probably struggle by on that. I know this oil guy said he's struggling by with his 25 stripper wells, and he was making it on $10 a barrel. At $10 back in the 80s now, he's getting $10 a barrel. And he said, yeah, you had to pump these wells. If you don't pump them, the state makes you come out and seal them up. So at $10, you know, he's getting $250 a week. You know, he was making ends meet. You know, it wasn't the greatest in the world, but he was getting by. I imagine today he's probably doing a little bit better, because down there in those holes, if you leave the oil alone, it drips down and it pools, and then you can pump it out at the end of the week and you get 10 barrels. You know, some 25 barrels and some 50 barrels, but, you know, if you're getting 10 barrels a week, he said you can just barely get by. You can pay for the cost of pumping and stuff like that. Now, the oil companies and the legislators have shut all those down. 100,000 oil wells in America, except for a few, have all been shut down. We lost 20% of our oil production in the United States of America by closing down the stripper wells, which didn't make any economic sense at all for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Makes all the economic sense in the world for Exxon, BP, and Shell Oil, because we don't like competition. Now, once those wells are sealed up, you can't go back and spend $1 million for 10 barrels of oil. But as long as the well is open and producing, you can leave that well open, producing 10 barrels of oil forever. Well, maybe not forever, but for, you know, 100, 200 years. You're never going to get the 15,000 barrels a day that you got when the oil well first came in and it was a gusher, but, you know, maybe it's down to 10 barrels a week. But 10 barrels a week times 100,000 wells, it's 1 million barrels a week, ain't it? It's better than a kick in the ass. So maybe managing our oil reserves, maybe managing would be a help, don't you think? And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the opinions and beliefs of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about energy. Now, energy is a very, very big subject. I mean, it covers a lot of ground. I got a stack of paper here sitting on my desk. It's probably, an inch, maybe a little more than an inch thick. Probably 100 pages or 150 pages here. And we're talking about petroleum. And petroleum is very important. It's where we get our gasoline, where we get our diesel fuel. And, of course, there's other ways to make biomass and diesel fuel. You can actually, when we get to coal, you can actually make diesel fuel and gasoline out of coal. It's called coalification, I believe it is, coalification. And the Germans developed this during World War II. They got cut off. They didn't have a source of liquid petroleum, so they had to use coal. to make the fuel for their airplanes and stuff like that for their war effort. And they got by all right on it. And it could be done here today if we really got down to where push came to shove. But for our purposes here, I just wanted to show you how much oil there was in the world. There's a 366-year supply of liquid petroleum in the world. You might not have known that in the past, and the oil companies are not out here telling you about a 366-year supply. I mentioned to you that the sun's burning out. The sun is a limited energy source. But since the sun isn't going to burn out for another 100,000 years, it isn't critical, you know, that we conserve the sun's energy right away. I mean, you know, we can be prodigal son types, you know, for a little while with the sun's energy. Now, from 1855 on, they've been predicting peak oil, and there's an economic reason for it. If I come along to you and I say there's no end to this product, then what's our production costs? Well, after you have poked a hole in the sands of Saudi Arabia, and you have an oil well producing, and the oil is coming out of the ground under 1,600 pounds of pressure, well, until it quits coming out of the ground, what does it cost you to produce that oil? The answer is zero. It doesn't cost anything to produce it. The production cost has already been in drilling the well, which is about $1 million. All right. So when the oil is coming out at the rate of 15,000 barrels a day, and it's worth $100 a barrel, let's just try that. 15,000, see, I'll plug that into my Sharp EL1197 here. And so let's try 15,000 times 100. That's $1,500,000 a day. So when they bore a well in Saudi Arabia, and it costs $1 million to drill this oil well, and we hit an oil well with 1,600 pounds of pressure that's putting out 15,000 barrels a day, which is the kind of production that big oil companies like, it produces $1,500,000 a day. So we can recover the cost of poking the hole in the ground in about 15 or 20 hours. Okay, now, with this oil well producing, how long will it produce? Well, it won't produce 15,000 barrels a day forever. As the pressure goes down, it produces less. Pretty soon, it isn't producing 15,000 barrels a day. It's only producing 1,000 barrels a day, and then 500 barrels a day. And then finally, it gets to a point where they call it a stripper well. It runs out of pressure, and it doesn't produce anything at all. Then we have to pump the oil out. Well, in Saudi Arabia, they don't pump oil. They just go drill another hole. And that's what they do in Kuwait and Abu Dhabi and in Iran. They don't mess around pumping oil like they do in Texas and Wyoming and California, where you go down to Long Beach, California, and they got all these oil wells. I went to a restaurant, and there was an oil well pumping out in the parking lot. I mean, they do that in California. In fact, they had so much oil there in Long Beach, California, that they've been pumping oil there for a long time. The land there in Long Beach has sunk 11 feet over the last, oh, no. 11 was the number I heard last time. That was many years ago. Hell, it's probably 20 feet by now. And then as they pump the oil out of the ground, well, then the land subsides. It goes down into where the oil has been taken out. And so there's a bunch of oil there. So I want to tell you how much oil there is in the world. I said there's a 366-year supply. If you got your pen and paper out here, let me tell you where it's at. There's 1 trillion barrels of oil in the Middle East. They got what they call proven reserves. This is where they drill a hole in the ground, and it comes out at 15,000 barrels a day. And they drill 10 wells, and they get, you know, 15,000 barrels out of each one. You know, well, pretty soon, they do some estimating, and they're kind of sophisticated at it now, you know, and they say, well, this well field here probably going to last for quite a while. And they figure out about how long based upon other well fields, and they tell you how much oil is there. So they tell us that there's about 1 trillion barrels in the Middle East. I'll put an X over here where it's in the Middle East. This includes Iraq, Iran, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, 1 trillion barrel. Now, that doesn't mean that that's all the oil they got. They might have 10 trillion barrels, but that's all that we know about. See, they haven't drilled oil wells over every square foot of it, so I don't know if they've got any more oil out there than the trillion barrels that's already been proven. But the Saudis, they got 35% of it, and the Iraqis, they got 25%, and the Iranians got 10%, and so on. And they run it down, they run around the circle over here, and they got 1 trillion barrels over there, according to National Geographic magazine. All right, now, up at the Arctic Circle, back in 1981, after they were pumping out of Prudhoe Bay there for a while, they took a look around in places like Siberia, Canada, and Alaska around the Arctic Circle, and they estimated that based upon what they'd found in Prudhoe Bay, and based upon the other geologic formations that were around the same region, they said, well, there's another 1 trillion barrels of oil up there. Trillion barrels. Now, in case you wanted to know, 1 trillion barrels is a 33-year supply of oil. At the world's current level of consumption, you take all the people in the world, 6.5 billion of us, all of us using oil every day, and we're using about 30 billion barrels a year. So a trillion barrels, that's 1,000 billion, divide 33 or 30 into 1,000, you come up with 33. And so that's about 33 years supply. All right. Now, in North Dakota, I just picked this up on the wire service the other day, it came out of Amelia, I believe it was, and he said that they just discovered that they've got about 500 billion barrels of oil up there in North Dakota. Now, they haven't drilled any oil wells up there that, other than a few test wells back. They've known this since 1951, that there was half a trillion barrels of oil up there. That's enough to run the entire world for 15 years, just in North Dakota. Yeah, it would run the United States of America. See, we used to use about 6 billion barrels here in the United States. Let's just take 500 divided by 6. Okay. It would run all of the oil needs of the United States of America for 83 years. Just this one oil find in North Dakota that they revealed the other day. It was in the paper. And they've known about it since 1951, which leads me to ask the question, how many more of these are around the country that they don't talk about? Huh? So I got to tell you a little story here. When I was a kid up in Humboldt County, California, they knew that there was oil down at Petrolia. That's because it comes out of the ground naturally there in Petrolia. And the oil companies came up there in Humboldt County, and they started drilling oil wells around there. So they drilled. We'd ask them, say, well, did you find anything? Can't tell you, Jack Billy Squat. Now, they drilled some gas wells there. Over at Thompson Hill, they got a couple of gas wells there. It's been running Eureka, California since the 1920s. So there's natural gas in Humboldt County, and there's oil in Humboldt County. They've never developed it other than Thompson's Hill. And it runs all of the gas needs. Natural gas has been coming out of there for the last, 80, 90 years. And where there's natural gas, there's oil, but they don't talk about it. How much is there? They're not talking. There was an oil find 35 miles wide, 65 miles long in the Gulf of Mexico off of Monterey, Mexico, discovered back in the 1970s. Never heard another word about it. Well, it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, you know, if you're sitting on a lot of products, it's hard to sell a lot of product for a lot of money. But if you're sitting on peak oil and we're running out of oil, and there's great shortages looming on the horizon, then you can charge more for it. So as a marketing strategy and as a businessman, I can tell you right now, if I was in the oil business, I'd be telling everybody there's a god-awful shortage looming on the horizon. Peak oil is just around the corner. And that's what they've been telling us, you know, for the last 150 years, you know, since 1854. They've been telling us, hey, peak oil is right here. And then miraculously, every time we turn around, they find a little bit more oil. So we got a trillion barrels in the Middle East. We got a trillion barrels in the Arctic Circle. We got a half a trillion barrels in North Dakota, you know. And then there's all the rest of the people in the world. Yeah, there's a little bit of oil all over the world. How much of that is available? 2 trillion barrels. So if you go to Nigeria and Venezuela and the North Sea, and you just go all over the world, and you got another 2 trillion barrels. You know, so let's see, now we got a half a trillion in North Dakota. We got a trillion at the Arctic Circle. We got a trillion in the Middle East, and now we got 2 trillion worldwide. If you just count it all up a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, 2 and 2 is 4, 4 and 4 is 8, and so. And by the way, that 2 trillion barrels includes the oil in Venezuela, which is 1 trillion barrels. They get, but the Venezuelan oil isn't very good oil. It's really cheap junk trash. It's heavy crude, they call it. It's real heavy duty stuff. I mean, it's heavy, heavy. You got to pump it out of the ground. So when you go to Venezuela, you'll notice that they got oil pumps down there pumping it out, and the oil companies don't like that. I mean, they put up with it, but they don't really care for it because it's more expensive to produce. In fact, it takes 17% of the energy that you get out of the well every day to produce it. By comparison, when you drill a well over in Saudi Arabia and you're getting 15,000 barrels a day, let's just go times 0.17, and it would take 2,550 barrels of oil a day just to produce it in Venezuela. So if you're getting 15,000 barrels of oil out of the ground in Venezuela, you got to spend 2550 times, let's just go times $100 a barrel. It costs $255,000 a day to run an oil well in Venezuela producing 15,000 barrels a day. And it costs exactly $0 a day to produce the same 15,000 barrels a day out of Saudi Arabia or out of Prudhoe Bay. They've never pumped a gallon of oil out of Prudhoe Bay. From 1970s, you know, when they first developed that field, built that pipeline, never pumped a barrel. All comes out under pressure. What's the production cost? Zero. Now, that's a pretty good profit margin when it costs you nothing to produce. It pays you, your production costs are paid for in one day, in 20 hours. And from then on, everything that comes out of there is 100%. It's just transportation. That's a pretty good business, wouldn't you say? All right, so I'd throw that one out there for you. Now, there's a couple of other places that we got some oil that you probably never heard of. It's called oil shale. Here in the United States, we have more oil than all the rest of you people out there in the world combined. Yeah, we got, it's called oil shale. There's 3.6 trillion barrels of recoverable oil. There's more than that there, but that's what's recoverable. These numbers, by the way, there was a special edition that was put out by the National Geographic magazine in the early 1980s. I think it was 1981. It was called Energy, and they had these numbers in there. And then there's another place up in Canada. It's called the tar sands. Well, I didn't know how much oil they had up there. And back in the old days, when oil was selling for $3 a barrel, they would have to have $6 a barrel to produce that tar sands oil out of Alberta. And so they didn't produce it. They experimented with it and dinked around with it for a long time. Now they're really getting serious up there. With oil at $100 a barrel, it costs $30 a barrel to produce that tar sand oil. It costs $30 a barrel to produce that oil shale oil back in the 70s. Now give them a little, you know, for give them a little for inflation, and it costs $70 a barrel to produce oil today in the United States of America. If we wanted to produce our oil here in America without buying any oil from Saudi Arabia, then we could go out to Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado, those three states, and we could start making oil shale oil, which is what we used to do in this country, you know, before we discovered that we had drilling rigs and we could go down there and get that oil out of the ground. Yeah, we used to make it out of that oil shale. And that's 3.6 trillion barrels there, and the Canadians have 3 trillion barrels that they have discovered so far and proved their reserves. They figure there's 2 or 3 times that much tar sand in Canada. The Canadians don't even know how much they got up there, because as they keep exploring, they keep finding more of it. See, in the past, they didn't need to explore, because it wasn't worth anything, because it cost too much to produce it. But then they got to the point where they said, well, gee, now it's worth producing. So they went out and started counting it. So far they counted 3 trillion barrels, and they're still counting. You Canadians have got so damn much oil up there, you won't know what to do with it all. And they figured that there's probably 3 times that much up there, but they don't know yet because they ain't counted it. So we're not going to count that. We ain't going to count it. But just from where we have counted so far, we got 1 trillion barrels in the Arctic Circle that we know about. We got 1 trillion barrels in the Middle East that we know about. We got 3.6 trillion barrels in the oil shale in the United States that we know about. We got tar sands at 3 trillion barrels that we know about. Just revealed, we had 0.5 trillion barrels of drillable oil up in North Dakota. We've known about it since 1951, but we didn't talk about it. And then we got 2 trillion barrels of oil worldwide, which includes Venezuela. They got 1 trillion barrels down there in Venezuela. And then there's another 1 trillion barrels scattered all over the world, here and there and everywhere. That's a 366-year supply at 30 billion barrels a year, boys and girls. So that's what we know about. But we're not running out of oil. There's no peak oil problem here caused by any physical constraints. We have a peak oil problem caused by political restraints. See, since we started practicing communism here in the United States, we got really serious about it back in the 1930s. We notice now that we're able to stand in line and share the shortage. How do you like it? See, when we had a market capitalist system here in the United States, we had all the oil that we knew what to do with, and it was being produced from the bottom up by little individuals and hundreds of oil companies all competing for your market share, and it was about 30 cents a gallon. Today we got 5 oil companies producing oil from the top down with a national energy policy headed by the Bush administration. We got $3.50 gas, $3.76 diesel fuel, and it's going up a dollar, and we'll have $6 gasoline in the United States of America over the next 36 months. Now that's what you get for practicing communism. You get to stand in line, share the shortage, and pay through the nose. Let's hear it for communism, the 10 planks. Now, I'm not going to change any of that. I'm just here as a reporter. I just wanted to let you know that there was a time before communism when we had oil and we had peak oil. Boys and girls, we've had peak oil since 1855. I just reported it to you. Remember? And all through peak oil, we had 30 cent a gallon gas. Let me run this by you again. In 1855, people could only access whatever oil happened to seep to the surface. And an advertisement for Kier's Rock Oil stated, "Hurry before the wonderful product is depleted from nature's laboratory." In 1874, the state geologist of Pennsylvania, the United States' leading oil-producing state, said that the oil would run out by 1878. And then, because there was a demand for it, little independent guys would go out and expend their capital and resources, and they would produce it. By 1920, the U.S. Geological Survey stated that the world had only 60 billion barrels of oil left. 1920, only got 60 billion barrels. We're running out. Peak oil's here. Hurry! By 1950, geologists estimated that the world had 600 billion barrels of oil. Peak oil has arrived by 1950. But, you know, by 1950, we still had plenty of oil. But we still had hundreds of little producers. Now, today, boys and girls, you don't have hundreds and thousands of little producers out there. You've just got 5 big oil companies, and they have the monopoly. And now you have shortages. You got a 366-year supply of oil, and you've got shortages and $3.76 a gallon diesel fuel selling here at our local DX station. We're standing in line, and we're sharing the shortages. By 1994, we had 2.4 trillion barrels. By 2000, we had 3 trillion barrels. I mean, that's what they're admitting to. But you know, boys and girls, when you get the Wikipedia out and you start looking at the numbers over here, the numbers are available. I mean, it isn't that I'm a genius and that I just figured this out and I'm out here giving you some new revelation. Let me tell you, children, I don't know of a single barrel of oil any place in the world. I couldn't find it with both hands in a roadmap. I'm just reading it from the Wikipedia, for crying out loud. National Geographic. And they got their information from the oil company. Now remember that half a trillion barrels that they just discovered. Just discovered. I just read about it last week in North Dakota. Hell, they had that on the book since 1951. Boys and girls, there isn't any need to produce oil in North Dakota. And when you got oil in Saudi Arabia coming out of the ground at 15,000 barrels a day, free, with no production cost. There isn't any need or reason to produce 3 trillion barrels of oil in Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming that's going to cost $70 a barrel to produce and employ 2.5 million Americans when you can get it for $15,000 or 15,000 barrels a day free in Saudi Arabia. So don't expect that there's going to be any policy change concerning petroleum, that is oil, anytime soon. It ain't going to happen on planet Earth. Time to wake up, smell the coffee. And it's time for us to grow up and get real. So there's the story on peak oil. But there's more to come when we talk about energy next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Hey, we're about out of time, so let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, we're about out of time, so we're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.